Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. This hour, we are blessed to be joined by my friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen of EWTN News. Every week, we get to discuss church news, current events in light of church teaching, and it's one of my favorite segments because it's so important. Al Crutcher taught me this countless times, that it's so important for us as Catholics to keep our fingers on the pulse of the culture, on the pulse of the news. Not because we want to be obsessed about the news, rather because we understand that Christ is Lord over creation, over reality, and in fact, over the ebbs and flows of human history, including current news. And so, one of the things that we are going to be talking about with Matthew is China's DeepSeek AI. I want to return to this in a bit. I want to open, however, with an issue that has arisen. This was a syncretistic theory put forth by a priest, a religion-teaching priest, and it was that Jesus is a yogi. Now, this concept of Jesus is a yogi, this is what this priest put out. In the 30 years of hidden life, Jesus was most likely did not remain in Nazareth, but went to India or other countries, more often than not, it's Tibet that speculated, where he learned Eastern wisdom, and so that way he could be considered a yogi. Now, this is an attempt, this is completely not new. People like Thomas Merton have said stuff like this in the past. The reason why this is so important is because it's nonsense. There's zero historical evidence for this to begin with. And in fact, if you pierce through the veil, you see that this claim is outlandish, but it also negates the historical statements of Jesus Christ that were patently exclusive. This theory puts Jesus as nothing more than some kind of wise religious teacher, when in reality he made absolute claims to be the Son of God, chief among which is from the Gospel of John, 14 verse 6, I am the way, the truth, the life, no one comes to the Father except through me. And so, as we read through the scriptures, we have that hope. In the second part of the hour, we'll be speaking with Teresa Tomeo. The Christian life is a journey through pilgrimage. We are a pilgrim church. And so when we undertake even physical pilgrimages here on earth, they participate in the grander pilgrimage of our journey from now unto eternal life. And so we talk about this with Teresa and pilgrimages that can be taken in Italy. All of this we talk about after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, February 6th. It's the Feast of St. Paul Miki and Companions. Today's news brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. President Trump says the country has to bring religion back.
We have to bring it back much stronger. It's one of the biggest problems that we've had over the last fairly long period of time.
Speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast at the U.S. Capitol, Trump said the country is always and will be one nation under God. He also said that God was watching over him on that day last July when someone tried to assassinate him. The National Prayer Breakfast is a bipartisan event that has been held annually for more than seven decades. A second judge is now blocking President Trump's executive order related to birthright citizenship. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown says Trump overstepped.
We're back to the status quo that we've had in this country for 150 years, that you are an American if you are born on U.S. soil.
Trump signed the order on his first day in office to narrow birthright citizenship so it doesn't apply to children born in the U.S. to parents that don't have a permanent legal status. A federal judge is putting on pause the Trump administration's so-called deferred resignation offer to federal employees, the judge ordering the deadline for workers to make their decision until at least Monday. The original deadline was set for the end of today. The pause allows for arguments over the offer at a hearing set for next week. The New Orleans Catholic Archbishop is denying claims that he fired the leadership of a church-backed food bank after they opposed a plan to use donations to settle lawsuits with the victims of sexual abuse. Archbishop Gregory Amon blaming himself for not speaking out earlier. He says the workers were removed because they refused to sign paperwork that would have protected both them and the church from lawsuits. That's something the workers dispute. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. This is one of my favorite times of the week. I enjoy every facet of doing this program, but I greatly enjoy connecting with Dr. Matthew Bunsen as we talk about current events in light of church teachings, church news, because these issues that we talk about sometimes, very often actually, directly pertain to the salvation of our souls. And even if in an ancillary way they do, the fact is we need to know that we may pray, discern, and be aware, and also take action. Matthew is Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, and I'm very, very glad to have you join us, Matthew. How are you?
Oh, great to be with you. And as always, it's almost impossible to live up to such praise, but thank you for that.
Well, you do that and then some, Matthew. I truly look forward to it.
And ditto, too. I love our sessions every week, so it's a privilege to do them.
Thank you. So, Jesus being a yogi, this is not new, okay? Like we just need to admit, we've been hearing this for decades. It's just making a resurgence.
Well, you're absolutely right. I was reminded a little bit, and this is somewhat controversial, but not on my part, but we go back to some of the writings and interpretations of what Thomas Merton wrote about before his passing. This effort to harmonize, to reflect on possible connections between Christianity and something like Buddhism, in particular Zen Buddhism. So it isn't necessarily new. And I think it's also a reflection of what we have seen, certainly in recent years, of this idea that I'm spiritual but not religious.
Right.
But also this idea that all religions are equal, so I can pick and choose and even sort of do a mashup of different religions. So that by way of a little bit of background, I think lurks behind this controversy that has emerged in the Diocese of Orihuela, Alicante in Spain.
And like you mentioned, and rightly as you mentioned, Thomas Merton, and the background of this nonsensical idea is that Jesus spent time in those silent years before his public ministry in Tibet, in the mountains of Tibet, and that's where he gained access to and harmonized Eastern spirituality with Western wisdom, and seriously, it takes so much of a stretch to be even able to hold this position. And that's why this needs to be corrected, because I personally know people who would willingly buy this.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And it's fitting, too, with, remember back, I think it was in the 70s or so, the Jesus Project, and all of these different efforts to put it colloquially, make Jesus hip. To seemingly connect with the modern culture, the modern era, to embrace this idea, again, of religions all being kind of equal. Mm-hmm. But at the heart of it, I think it's two things. It's this, as the bishop of Orihuela, Alicante in Spain, is José Ignacio Munilla, who is something of a brilliant writer. I saw him give a presentation at the International Eucharistic Congress in Ecuador. That was, for me, one of the great highlights. For the clarity of his teaching, but he's concerned about the syncretistic conception of Christianity and Buddhism as an interpretation of the gospel. But also at the heart of it is this idea that we see very frequently that Jesus, he may or may not have been divine, he may or may not have been God, which is an Arian conception, but he was more of a yogi, as the bishop dismissively says that this claims, that he was not God, but he was a yogi, he was a guru, he was somebody who can show us the way type of thing. And I think those two come together in a really toxic and poisonous manner. So that leads then again to these, what he refers to as crazy interpretation of the gospel.
Yep.
And it's why we have to have recourse that somehow Jesus is learning his wisdom, as the bishop writes, has to come from his stay in India or Tibet before beginning his public life. It's a lack of respect, as he writes, for the gospel, but it also hides, as he writes also very correctly, errors in an erroneous conception of Christology, which is, of course, the theological study of who Christ is.
Yep, exactly. And we can go down the doctrinal train of the issues that this immediately presents, but one of the core issues is, if this syncretism is true, we have to negate all of the exclusive statements that Jesus makes in the Gospels. And those statements make or break the revelation of Christianity, period.
That's right. And in this particular case, Bishop Munia was responding to and refuting the work of a priest who's the founder of an organization called Friends of the Desert Association. And it had to do with Jesus of Nazareth, teacher of consciousness. So right at the start, you mm-hmm. begin to appreciate some of the potential problems and errors right. that might emerge here. But we have seen similar refutations over these last decades of erroneous teachings about who Christ is. And some of it emerged in India with these false interpretations or erroneous interpretations. In this case, I think it's sort of coming from the other direction in the sense that now we're seeing or have been seeing certain Western theologians or even just priests in general making these claims and certain lay theologians making these claims.
Yep. Yep, and God bless them. Thank God for bishops who are willing to stand up and correct this nonsense. I want to move on just to touch very briefly. As we touched on last week, J.D. Vance made certain statements about the USCCB and receiving funding on illegal immigration. CNA has a good piece out called How the Catholic Church Partners with the U.S. Government to Serve Migrants. Mm-hmm. Very briefly, let's make sure that we get the truth out there about the issue.
Well, that's right. So J.D. Vance himself did make those comments. He used a phrase in there that I think was picked up by many in the press that somehow, as he put it, the USCCB, or the bishops, were not good partners in the area of immigration. Mm-hmm. And that earned, I think, a very swift reaction on the part of Archbishop Timothy Broglio, who's the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and he's also the head of the Archdiocese for Military Services, in which similar claims that somehow the bishops, as also the vice president said, were sort of worried about their bottom line, is right. how he put it, in receiving this money. And I think Archbishop Broglio, he did this actually on an Italian television station, talked about the fact that we spend, as he put it, more than we receive to help the poor. So the number that's been thrown around, $100 million, that is dedicated to assistance, we know from their own accounting, and the bishops themselves have these audits every year, we know that they spend significantly more than that every year. On these services. So
right.
This isn't something that could actually help the bottom line.
Yep.
One of the things that I think we're seeing, though, is that, and you and I talked about this in the aftermath of the election, that every administration is going to have those areas of agreement with the bishops and areas of disagreement. And in the previous administration, it had to do with an intrinsic evil, which was the wild support, the radical support of the Biden administration for things like abortion, and then moving into other areas of deep concern for Catholics, and especially from the moral teaching side, on gender and transgender ideology. There were some areas of agreement on immigration, for example. I don't think many of the bishops were in favor, for example, of the wide open policies of what were interpreted, at least, as the wide open policy of the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing, in some ways, the reverse, the mirror of this, that there is much, as the U.S. bishops across the country, and as the conference would say, much to agree with the Trump administration in its swift moves in the area of transgender ideology, with the executive orders, also the restoration of the Mexico City policy and other things on abortion. But the flashpoint now is on immigration. So this is an area that we see historically exists. So in some ways, this is playing out as we would have anticipated. But I think there has been some surprise at how swiftly the Trump administration has moved and the degree to which it seems willing to defund.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly then this flashpoint over defunding of potential Catholic organizations. We're hearing things like Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities.
Right, exactly. And And we need to exercise our own prudential judgment in the way we sift through the news, because it's all too easy to want to establish a particular narrative that demonizes, especially in this case, the USCCB. But there's more at play, like you've just described. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. We're talking about current events in light of church teachings and church news. Stay tuned as we continue the segment in the next hour. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Hi, Vanessa Denha-Garmo here, inviting you to tune into Epiphany. We're made to praise God and celebrate our faith. I want to encourage listeners to connect, communicate, and collaborate with the faith community. Life is a journey, and along the way, we have those Epiphany moments that bring us closer to Christ. Please partner with me and celebrate the diversity of our Catholic Church.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon, only on Ave Maria Radio.
Italy aficionado Teresa Tamio's newest book is now out on the Ave Maria online store. In Italy's shrines and wonders, Teresa Tamio provides how best to navigate the most popular sites, best routes, and how to best to soak in all the beauty Italy has to offer. She also shares the most inspiring journeys to make your Italy excursion utterly unforgettable. Italy's Shrines and Wonders from Catholic Connections Teresa Tamio can be purchased at avemariaradio.net. When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking about church news, current events in light of church teaching. So, Matthew, I want to pick up on a different thread here. The St. Louis Archdiocese, they've taken a stance against one of their pastors, and it has to do with an issue that's continually rearing its ugly head in terms of pastoral prudence. So just tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, in this case, we were just talking about Bishop Munilla in Spain trying to clarify who Christ is.
Mm-hmm.
So Christology, in this case, the Archdiocese of St. Louis has had to very clearly distance itself from the comments of one of their own priests who was testifying in the Missouri House Committee hearing on a bill basically that would look at a ban on transgender procedures for minors. Now, this is as we say, it's a prudential judgment. It also it veers directly into Catholic moral teaching, Catholic social teaching, bioethics, certainly from a Catholic moral standpoint. And to have a priest actually testifying during a Missouri House Committee on a bill like this, I think, came as a surprise to a lot of people. And in his testimony, this is Father Mitchell Doyen, who's a pastor in St. Louis, that he's talking about how he knows and befriends transgender youth and adults and their mm-hmm. parents and their friends. So this is the type of testimony that one would expect from advocates of this movement, and I think the Archdiocese was fairly disappointed, but certainly based on their expressions yeah. of distancing themselves from the comments. So we'll have to see if there are additional steps being taken by the Archdiocese.
Yep, and that's on an administrative response level. Let's talk about the doctrinal issue of some of Father Doyen's statements very quickly. Their desire to live fully human, authentic, graceful, and gifted lives in our community is a profound blessing to us. The Church doesn't deny that, But the church is concerned about medical procedures that can cause irreparable and definitely not beneficial. It's not beneficial to them, but irreparable harm to them, rather than facilitate their true human flourishing.
Well, that's right. And that's why the Archdiocese, to its great credit, went some distance in saying that the priest in question was speaking on his own behalf, and that his comments, and this is what I really appreciate about their statement, did not accurately reflect church teaching. So we obviously have the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is clear, but we also have a statement just a couple of years ago by the U.S. bishops talking specifically as a warning about surgical or chemical interventions, and as they put it, that aim to transform the sexual characteristics of the body into those of the opposite sex. It represents that fundamental order of the human body as being sexually differentiated. It rejects all of that. And at the same time, that the statement, as the Church always does, affirms compassion and inherent dignity of all men and women, including those who are struggling with gender dysphoria.
Right.
That we don't discriminate, but we also have to be very clear in what we believe.
Yeah, and that's crucial for us to understand. We're not discriminating their personhood. We're not discriminating their dignity as human persons. But we have concern. We genuinely stand against the lie that God made a mistake in the way he designed them, and therefore that medical intervention, surgical intervention, is the solution here. Rather, we argue that acceptance of the gift of their personality is exactly what God is calling them to do.
Right. And one area that, and this is going to be true potentially in other situations as certainly the Trump administration moves as aggressively as it has with executive orders on things like transition surgeries or what is euphemistically called gender-affirming care, that there was, at this very hearing, a weird dissonance, because you had this testimony from the priest of the Archdiocese, but at the same time, you had a testimony from the Missouri Catholic Conference, and that's Guillermo Villatrueba,
right,
who was reiterating very clearly the support of the official church for this bill that would continue to protect minors from procedures, and as he put it, based on false understanding of human nature, which are designed to attempt to change a child's sex. And from that standpoint then, he went on to say that young people struggling with gender dysphoria are loved by God, and again, that church teaching possesses the same inherent dignity that all persons do, but that means that they deserve help that heals rather than harms.
Exactly.
And that's where we keep coming to the fundamental reality of the using puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones for the purpose of gender transition can and will only inflict harm and cause suffering, which is the rationale, certainly as far as the Trump administration is concerned, and those who are opposed to it, banning these transition surgeries for minors. So you have a very clear statement like that, but then you have what would seem to be a completely contradictory statement in the same testimony, in that same hearing. So it creates this false equivalence in church teaching. And I think that's one of the reasons why the faithful are sometimes scandalized and in other cases are very confused,
right.
When you have this type of messaging and there's a just complete incoherence, it seems at least, in what the church is presenting.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue to press forward, trusting that our bishops will stand firm, being stalwart voices of reason. I want to switch gears very quickly here in terms of China's DeepSeek AI.
Yes.
And the fact that we ought to have our cautious concern and our alarm bells up ready to go when we face it.
Well, you're right. So DeepSeek, for those who haven't been following this, is it made quite the splash when it was announced, was it just last week, in what had already been a fairly tumultuous environment for AI in general. This is China's new official artificial intelligence chatbot. So it's an AI chatbot that very clearly challenges some of the others, I think in particular OpenAI and its ChatGPT, that you can download it to the smartphone, and it really did directly impact stocks. It had an impact on Wall Street. And what this is basically a Chinese government's version of a chatbot. So the question, of course, that's asked, and this is something that's, it's fun on one hand, but alarming and horrifying
yep.
on the other, because you start posing questions to DeepSeek from two directions. One, what does the church actually teach? But then you start asking it questions as the National Catholic Register did. That's Courtney Mares, who did what I'm referring to as a deep dive into DeepSeek. Asking these questions about, okay, what is the censorship that might happen? So she was very programmed. She systematically put DeepSeek through its paces. And what she found was that some questions were answered fully, but then were censored literally moments later in live time. Others sort of baffled the AI. So it began something of an internal monologue because it wasn't sure how to respond because of the limitations that had been placed on it. And then it offered questions and answers to basic Christianity, that things like, should I become Catholic? And if I want to learn more about Jesus and Christianity, what can you tell me? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. A lot of very interesting questions, some answers that I think the Register certainly found to be fairly decent. But then it really becomes more of a challenge when you ask it about the presence of Christianity in China.
Yes.
And there it began, you could see very clearly the self-censorship and the obvious limitations that were placed on the AI itself that long-term, I think, makes it very difficult for a Catholic to use.
Right.
And certainly one has to be aware that in much the same way that there were concerns about TikTok, Red Note, for example, that was supposed to be the replacement for TikTok, that there are genuine concerns about security and granting what would be effectively the Chinese Communist Party access to your system. And I know that's undergirding so much of the worry that people have about programs like this and TikTok.
Yep, exactly. And that should be at the forefront of our minds, actually, that if we're dabbling with a lot of these AI interfaces, we're granting them access to our data, our information. And something like DeepSeek AI doesn't even pretend to not want to mine that data.
Yes, exactly. So it'll be fun to watch how this evolves.
Thank you very much for the time, Matthew. I always appreciate speaking with you.
It's great to be with you. Have a great weekend.
You too. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We've been talking about church news, current events in light of church teaching. Stay tuned for the next segment. I'm Marcus Peter.
The most amazing saints from modern times, John Paul II, Maximilian Kolbe, and Maria Faustina with the Divine Mercy. This is Steve Ray. We invite you to join us on a pilgrimage to Poland and experience this incredible Catholic country, the land of saints, Catholic culture, gorgeous churches and shrines, and delicious food. Join us next April as we again visit Poland, one of our favorite pilgrimage destinations.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Italy aficionado Teresa Tamio's newest book is now out on the Ave Maria online store. In Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Teresa Tamio provides how best to navigate the most popular sites, best routes, and how to best to soak in all the beauty Italy has to offer. She also shares the most inspiring journeys to make your Italy excursion utterly unforgettable. Italy's Shrines and Wonders from Catholic Connections Teresa Tamio can be purchased at avemariaradio.net.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
We have to remember that God gave us a brain, and He did give us talented people in the medical field, some of whom, not all unfortunately, are following the science. And we need to do the same. We need to take precautions and, again, use common sense and our heads. But we can't go around living in fear, not doing what we are called to do. And in many cases, that is to travel, to go see loved ones, to go on a retreat, to maybe go on a pilgrimage. We have to be, at all times, a people of faith. And we have to remember that the phrase, be not afraid, appears some 365 times in Scripture. Coincidence? I think not.
Catholic Connection, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Two of the hardest words to say in the English language. I'm sorry. I'll ask couples, when was the last time you said I'm sorry? I think it was our wedding rehearsal dinner. I spilled some coffee on her lap. I said, hey, sorry about that. Why is I'm sorry so hard to say? What does it mean to you? Are you saying you're a failure? Are you saying I'm wrong? Are you saying, if I say I'm sorry, I'm admitting it's all my fault? I'm sorry are two of the softest words in a relationship in the English language. I'm sorry, very hard to say, very easy on relationships.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm August Peter. We are a pilgrim church, and that means that all of us are on journey, in via, as St. Thomas Aquinas would say, from now unto our entry into eternal life. And one of the ways in which we can participate in this pilgrim heritage and pilgrim identity of the church is by going on pilgrimages. And Teresa Tomeo, who is the host of Catholic Connection on Ave Maria Radio and co-produced by EWTN, is the author of Italy Shrines and Wonders, Covering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places, and Destinations off the Beaten Path. Teresa, thank you for joining us. How many times have you been to Italy?
Thanks, Marcus, for having me on. I appreciate it. We were trying to figure that out. At least 60, probably closer to 70 times now, since for the past 23, 24 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this whole question, at the beginning of your book, especially with the words that John Hale wrote pertaining to this identity of being a pilgrim, let's begin there. Let's frame the conversation there. This question of participating in pilgrimages, whether local, international, how does it lend to our journey unto heaven?
I think it's super important, and again, thanks for mentioning John. John, of course, is our partner at Ave Maria Radio with Corporate Travel Service, and not only wrote the preface to the book, but actually wrote three very powerful testimonies from several of our pilgrims who have been with us, who had life-changing experiences on those trips that we've taken over the many years we've done our pilgrimages to Italy. And I think it's really important, and one of the things I also stress, too, is that if we're doing a pilgrimage to the Jubilee year, we can start at home. For example, in the Diocese of Lansing, where you are, in the Archdiocese of Detroit, where I am, both of our bishops are doing an incredible job of helping us understand the idea of pilgrimage. We are mm-hmm. a pilgrim people. This is not our home, so we are always on pilgrimage in every day of our life. And so in the year of this Jubilee year of hope, it's important for us to focus on that even more deeply. And it's a journey. It is about journeying with God, but I think taking it more seriously in the form of a pilgrimage. And that's what I tried to do with this book, and especially in a place like Italy, which is an incredible opportunity. Even if you don't go with an organized group to do it on your own, it really lends itself to some deep reflection, some deep meditation, and really rethinking that whole idea of pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about Italy, for example, in terms of that location in Central Europe and its mm-hmm. its significance in the narrative of Scripture and salvation history, and then you expand that into early church history, in fact, church
right.
history to this very day, what is the significance of Italy when it comes to the life of the church at large?
I think for me right now, in this very, you know, there's so much upheaval in our world, and still, you know, even after the election here in the United States, there's a great deal of division in the country, and sometimes we feel as Christians that this is our first rodeo. We haven't seen this before. We haven't seen this level of animosity or attacks on the church or attacks on individual people, what's been going on in our culture. And yet when you go to Europe, you mention Europe, of course, having been to Poland, having been to the Middle East and many other Catholic holy sites, especially in Italy, it reminds us that, no, this is not our first rodeo. You know, it says in Ecclesiastes, nothing new under the sun. And when you go to these different places, considering how far they go back, and you walk in the footprints of so many great doctors of the church, saints of the church all over Italy, you know, whether it's Thomas Aquinas, Catherine of Siena, or even, of course, the apostles Paul and Peter, which are so central to Rome, it really gives you the sense of the universal church and that the church has been with us. And what our Lord says in Matthew 16:18, he means, you know, the gates of hell are not going to prevail against the church because it's his church. And it gives us so much, and that's why I love the theme for this year, for the Jubilee Year, hope. It gives us so much hope because we see these saints and what they've gone through and how they address many of the issues that we are addressing today, especially in the church. So I think it's very encouraging when you go to Italy, even though many of the churches are basically built on, you know, the blood of the martyrs, people that were martyred for the faith. But again, it's a reminder that the church has been around for a long time and is going to remain because Christ said so.
And at the heart of it all is the eternal city. And that's as good a place as any to begin, because the blood of the martyrs is, in fact, the seed of the church. And in fact, the central spiritual identity of Rome comes from the fact that especially Peter and Paul and all the apostles in some way have shed their blood there.
Right. And so let's start in Rome. That's a great place, because most people, when they're going on pilgrimage to Italy, obviously Rome is a huge part of that. So what I always tell people, though, Marcus, is when you're doing this, and I mentioned this in the book, Italy is meant to be savored. It's meant to be savored, of course, because it's one of the great places for good wine and good food. But more than that, it's meant to be savored in terms of experiencing it from a faithful perspective, from a meditative reflection perspective. And so you go to Rome, and obviously you want to see the major basilicas, because during a holy year, the indulgences you can receive, and that starts, of course, with St. Peter's, and then, of course, there's St. Paul Outside the Walls, there's St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major. Beyond that, there's many other opportunities that the church has set up, which is really, really great. If you go to the Vatican website for the Jubilee Year, each month they have different celebrations. For example, this month of February, unfortunately, Deacon Dom and I can't attend it, but they are having a diaconate jubilee for deacons and their families from around the world. They're also having a jubilee for the military. So they're encompassing a lot of different apostolates and ministries with special charisms along this journey. So when you're going through, you know, St. Peter's or St. John Lateran or any of the other major churches, there's this feeling that you're being carried with other pilgrims. So those are some of the main sites. I mentioned the major basilicas. You have ancient Rome, the Colosseum. You have the Roman Forum. You have the Pantheon, which used to be a pagan temple, which, of course, has been a beautiful Catholic church for many centuries. You have the catacombs. You have the Scavi Tour under St. Peter's. So those are the main sites in Rome that you start with. And I always tell people, do not do more than one tour a day, because you're going to be, especially if it's your first time, you're going to be so overwhelmed by the beauty and the information and the history of our faith. You just don't know what to do with it all, and you need time just to take a breath and, again, ponder it. And so I suggest one tour a day, maybe starting with St. Peter's and the Vatican Museums, and then the next day maybe doing the other major basilicas, maybe even skip a day and then do ancient Rome. You have to pace yourself if you really want to have any experience, but if you want to have a proper pilgrimage experience, you have to stop and you have to make time to reflect. It's huge, huge.
This opens the grander question of what pilgrimages can do, especially blessed pilgrimage sites, and that is to reinduct us to that experience of what objective beauty looks like, because beauty as a transcendental participates in the grander essence that is God himself. And Rome and Italy encapsulate this beautifully, but we don't see this, especially in modernity, especially here in the West. So experiencing things like the four major basilicas or even the Pantheon gives us a foretaste of this. And so just comment on that, how the experience of that kind of a beauty helps us contemplate heaven.
Yeah, it's a really a great point and great question. And going back to the book, there's several testimonies that I mentioned. And the people that are interviewed in the book, including Mike Ritchie, who's local, Lori Maher, who's local, and, of course, actually Sister Rita, who's now down at Steubenville, but she's also from southeastern Michigan. It was actually the beauty and the experience of being in these churches and being in the countryside, let's say in Umbria of Assisi, that sparked them to look deeper into themselves and sparked them also to look up to the heavens and realize. So what I try to do is to tell people, okay, when you're going to see, for example, the Pietà, you walk into St. Peter's and it's just so overwhelming. You look to the right and there's the Pietà, right? It's just, you can't even believe you're looking at it. And you're so amazed by the gift of the artist who did these great religious pieces of art. Mm-hmm. You're pondering the art itself. You're pondering the artist. And then my hope, as I say in the book, is not only are you pondering the art, the artist, but who made the artist? Mm-hmm. Who gave the artist that gift to be able to do that type of a piece, which is so incredible, whether it be, you know, the Baldacchino or the Bernini Fountains or, again, you know, the Pietà or the Sistine Chapel. So beauty is huge, and so many people are taken back by it. So you have so many levels of beauty in Italy, which I try to stress. The people you have, the religious art, the basilicas, the different places of worship. But then you have the natural beauty of Italy, which is incredibly affirming and a reminder of God. In the area where Dominic and I now live half the year, in Umbria, it's known as the Cora Verde, or the Green Heart of Italy. Mm-hmm. And one of our favorite things to do is just to sit out on our little balcony and, you know, do nothing, la dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing, and just look out over the hills of the Umbrian countryside and contemplate God. I mean, I go out there, Marcus, every day when we're there and do my readings, and I literally stand up and I talk to God and I thank Him for making Italy. I actually have all of our pilgrims that, before we say grace, finish grace, after we say, you know, bless us, O Lord, and then thank you, God, for making Italy. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen, because it's so incredibly beautiful.
My guest, Teresa Tomeo, who is the author of Italy Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. She's the host of Catholic Connection, produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. And we will continue this conversation on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Remember the time I sent on the air? Go to confession. And when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
St. Gregory of Nazianzus once said, "He who does acts of mercy should do so with cheerfulness. The grace of a good deed is doubled when it's done with promptness and speed." The best way most of us can learn this approach to Christian service is in our family lives. That's why prompt, generous, consistent, and cheerful attention to each other's needs is such an important part of the liturgy of domestic church life. Every day, ask each other this life-changing question: what's one small thing each of us can do to make each other's lives a little easier or more pleasant? Then remember to do those things as a way of letting God's love shine out through you in your family. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Was Jesus' risen body the same body he dwelled in while living on earth? According to the Catholic Catechism, it was the same body that was crucified, but it was glorified and different in profound ways from the risen body of Lazarus, which Jesus brought forth from the tomb. Lazarus returned to his same earthly life with the same limitations he had when he left it. Jesus rose with new powers. His body was no longer confined to time and space. He could appear and disappear at will. He could walk through doors. He could also eat and drink as he did with the apostles to prove to them that he was not a ghost. He could appear in whatever guise he chose, as he did with Mary Magdalene when she thought he was the gardener. The reality of the resurrection of the body seemed an impossibility to the disciples. They needed the added impetus of God's grace to accept and believe such a reality. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection on Ave Maria Radio, author of Italy, Shrines and Wonders. We are talking about, well, really the great heritage of Italy itself and the numerous ways in which we can come into contact with the divine as God has worked out salvation history using that particular area of Central Europe as a true locus for the development of Christendom. So, Teresa, when we left off, we were talking about why we ought to be thankful for Italy as a heritage and one of those great epicenters of the explosion of Christendom. But even little things like everyone knows if you go to Rome, you're going to have to see the Trevi Fountain.
Right.
And so little silly things like, for example, it's illegal to steal coins from the Trevi Fountain, you know, little pieces of trivia like that. All of those things are down to this overall overarching view of beauty and contact with the divine when you're experiencing the grander picture of Italy.
That's so true, and I have a great story associated with the pilgrimage we just did last October that I'll get to in just a second. But, you know, what I love about being Catholic, so many things, but we're not just, our faith teaches us that the body, of course, based on the incarnation of our Lord, is so important. We're not just a soul or spirit flying around somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So being, you know, in the image and likeness of God, the Imago Dei, and being human and being a part of this earth with God created, and, you know, which Jesus recognized and so often in his parables, you know, to the people of his day. It's really important to understand, to embrace this and how to embrace it. Obviously, enjoying the good food and the good wine in moderation, but really appreciating the natural beauty of Italy and the fun little things, the quirky things. So last year we did one of our tours. We call it La Dolce Fide, the sweetness of faith. And we had a sold-out group, about 50 people, and we did Italy coast to coast. So we started on the Amalfi Coast and went to the Adriatic, which is Puglia, of course, San Giovanni Rotondo with Padre Pio. And our last stop, Marcus, was this really quaint town along the Adriatic coast, and it's called Pugliano a Mare. It's a beautiful coastal town, and we stayed at a really nice resort, a little bit inland, about a mile from the coast. And they did have a shuttle service, but the shuttle service was made up of something, and people can look this up. It's actually in the book. It's this little vehicle that's called a tuk-tuk. T-U-K. And you know what they are. They're these little cars, right? And they're super tiny. And there's one seat in the front for the driver, and there's like a two-seater.
They're not made for people like me, for sure.
But they're fun. And so it was so funny because, okay, so we're seeing all these great things. We're seeing the tomb of the great Padre Pio. We're, you know, seeing all these different beautiful basilicas all over, you know, southern Italy and the Amalfi Coast and St. Andrews and whatnot. And yet that little experience on the tuk-tuk was so joyful. People got such a kick out of that, just as you're referencing the Trevi Fountain. That is part of the joy that you get if you open yourself up, because, yes, you get the joy from praying at the tombs of the great saints, obviously, and seeing these magnificent basilicas, whether we're in Bari for St. Nicholas or, of course, in San Giovanni Rotondo for Padre Pio or up in Gargano for St. Michael. But the idea of joy from your gut, from your soul, to experience something as simple as a tuk-tuk, that was one of the highlights of the trip. And again, we were Italy coast to coast, from the Amalfi coast to the Adriatic, but just something fun like that. I think it's a part of who we are as human beings, joyful human beings, right?
Right. That participation in that spirit of adventure that, unfortunately, modernity and the Industrial Revolution has killed. But that's a different conversation. So one of those things that that going on a pilgrimage, especially a prolonged one, will allow you to do is you're not just encountering those core things that are so wondrous about, for example, the Vatican City in Rome, right?
Right.
You also have these subsidiary things. For example, I've known about Santa Maria Trastevere for a long time now because of its historical heritage. It's one of the few churches in Central Europe that borrows from the Eastern Catholic tradition and heritage of iconography, but
right.
with a distinctly Latin lean. So you've been there. Comment on that.
Oh yeah, many times. And that church is a very interesting location and fits into exactly what we're talking about, because you have Santa Maria in Trastevere, which is known for its iconography and also its mosaics, and it is in the main piazza of Trastevere, which is probably the most popular neighborhood in Rome, which people flock to because of its great restaurants and wine bars and music and festivals. So you've got that great combination, right, of the history of the church, of the beauty of the art, and then you have this joy of living La Dolce Fide, the sweet life, right, of Italy. And so I think that combination is super important, and I don't think you find it in too many other places in Europe. I've had the privilege of being all over Europe in many places, and all the countries I've been to are blessed and beautiful, especially with the Catholic history in many of them. But Italy has a sense of they don't live to work, they work to live. In other words, life comes first to them, which I think we don't have anymore in the United States.
No, my first job was in Ferrari, and so we had to really work with the Italians for getting parts, and it would take 3 to 4 months to order parts because that's how slowly they worked, and it wasn't a condemnation of them, is just their work philosophy. They worked in order that they may have a good life. So
And how long were your pranzos when you were working with the guys at Ferrari? I can imagine you were there for a couple hours, right, having your lunch and whatnot.
Oh, well, no. I worked. We had long hours, and it was just collaborating with them that was the difficult thing,
okay.
right? Let's move on. Like, one of the things that you highlight in your book, in terms of especially Ostia Antica, the reason why it holds a special place in my heart, it has to do with the life of St. Augustine of Hippo and being on that side of the Tiber. And the funny thing about that analogy of him converting, which is crossing the Tiber, literally. So tell us about the spiritual significance of that area.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Ostia Antica, it's interesting you should bring that up, because when most people think of archaeological sites or famous sites or ruins of Italy, they obviously think of, well, Herculaneum, which was a resort area in the Pompeii, Naples area, and then Pompeii, which is the city. And so, you know, the people would live in the city and go to their resorts in Herculaneum, and both places are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have Paestum on the other south end of the Amalfi Coast, which is Greek temples and other places. You can see so much great archaeology. But then, you know, you have Ostia Antica. And it's kind of like I would describe it as, Marcus, almost a mini Pompeii. It's not quite as large, but it is an ancient Roman port city located on the mouth of the Tiber that at the time was extremely important. And there's great stories, of course, attached to it with St. Monica and St. Augustine. And so there's that story of them. But where it's located now, obviously it's inland because of the way the geography has shifted, the topography has shifted over the centuries. But this is a great place to go, even, let's say, if you're not a person who wants to stay in Pompeii all day long, which I really recommend because it's phenomenal. But this is something you can do, again, getting back to the fun and the little kind of fun things you could do in Rome, is you could stop in Ostia Antica and do your own walking tour and then get back on the train and head out to the beach, because it is close to the beach. It used to be on the water, but now you could still do that in the day. Deacon Dom and I did that a couple of years ago. We were there in the summer. And we wanted to go to Ostia Antica because I love St. Augustine and St. Monica. And so we did our own little tour, walking tour, and then we went out to the beach. So that is a very important place history-wise, connected to Monica and Augustine, and very easy to get to from Rome. One of those things you can do on your own.
Right. So let's expand geographically. If we're talking about historical heritage, you've got that great Etruscan city, Tarquinia, and everything that it has to teach us in terms of also our heritage of Western civilization today.
And you know what, Tarquinia is something that I hadn't been to until one of our wonderful guides through corporate travel and our partners in Rome about 5 or 6 years ago said, we were concentrating on Lazio and Umbria for one of our tours, and she said, you know, you really need to take them to dive more deeply into the Etruscan history. Now, people may be familiar, for example, with Orvieto in Umbria, which is an Etruscan town, right, built by the Etruscans, and, of course, the home of the famous Eucharistic miracle of Bolsena. But not many people go further, and they really should, because Tarquinia has this whole area associated with the Etruscans. And one of the best museums
based on this civilization in all of Italy, and I would say, of course, in that part of the world. And so you go there, Marcus, and you walk through this museum, which is several floors high. Mm-hmm. And we think we're so smart and we're so creative and we're all that in a bag of chips when it comes to, you know, modern conveniences.
No,
but for example, the jewelry and the tools and the housewares that they actually invented and had back then, it is very eye-opening. And then you can actually go to basically their burial grounds, which had many tombs that are beautifully decorated. So it's a very powerful experience of seeing this up close and personal in terms of the history of civilization, as you said.
Yeah, and to think, many people seem to think that this was a Roman heritage. The truth is, Tarquinia's development predates the Roman Empire at its height.
Exactly.
And so we have these great heritages of even archaeological development and civilization in Tarquinia that have formed the bedrock of everything we take for granted today.
Right. And that's the thing that I wanted to bring out in the book, because when I'm sure you're noticing this, you're a lot younger than I am, but in social media, and being that you were an educator for so long, you know how social media impacts young people and all of us. And what I'm seeing now is that influencers, unfortunately, are really doing a disservice to Italy's history, which is why I wanted to include so much of what we talked about today in the book, because they post these pictures, very romantic pictures, whether you're up on Cinque Terre in Liguria or you're down on the Amalfi Coast and posing in front of the beach on Positano and the famous iconic view of the church in the background and the cupola, and they make it seem, and it is very romantic and beautiful, but people go there just for that experience. They can take their picture and put it on Facebook. And they don't stop, and they don't learn, and they don't breathe in the culture, which is a real shame. So I'm really hoping to get people to use this as an armchair pilgrimage. We're even doing an online series through EWTN. And I shot on location while I was still over in Umbria. We shot all over on location, giving people lessons of the history, not only of the saints associated with the different segments I'm doing, but also the history of the various areas, to make them give it a second look.
So if you're talking about saints, We can't miss talking about Umbria. It's got the strongest hagiographical heritage of all of Italy and Central Europe. So let's touch on that.
Oh, wow. Well, there's so many. Obviously, most famous would be St. Francis of Assisi and St. Clare of Assisi. But then you also have in the beautiful hilltop town of Todi, which is in between Orvieto and Assisi, is Blessed Jacopani. And Blessed Jacopani was a great poet, a great writer. And he also, of course, is most known for the Stabat Mater at the Crosser Station Keeping, which we still use today. So right in this little town, you have this blessed who actually had his reversion to the faith because of his wife who had been praying for him. It's a whole other story that I describe in the book. And so then if you head north, a little bit north, you're going to go to Assisi, and you have Santa Chiara, and you have St. Francis. And then also in Assisi now, you have the tomb of soon-to-be St. Carlo Acutis, who's buried there. He's not from there, but he's buried there. And then if you keep going east, you have Montefalco, and you have St. Clare of Montefalco, St. Clare of the Cross. Yeah. And then going even further east, I know we have to wrap up because I hear the music, but you have the birthplace of St. Benedict and St. Scholastica. And that's just to name a few.
And those are two of my favorite places in Italy. Thank you very much, Teresa. My guest, Teresa Tomio, host of Catholic Connection, Ave Maria Radio, and EWT, and author of Italy Shrines and Wonders. We've been talking about how the Christian faith is ultimately a general pilgrimage, and going on pilgrimage strengthens that. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.